Yeah.
I used to do a Vanilla Coke Zero, and I called it a Darth Jaeger. Oh. I was an idiot.
Darth Jaeger. That's classic. Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I am the author of The Little Red Book of Selling, and on my right...
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And we are bringing you this episode of Sell or Die live from Charlotte, North Carolina, where it's currently sunny and 55 going up to 65. And at the end of November, when the weather is 30s all over the place, it's nice to have a 65-degree afternoon, isn't it?
With oh, no, my goodness. Yeah, no you clouds go out in the morning with your winter coat,
and then
in the afternoon, you're in a T-shirt.
It's a pretty interesting place, and it's friendly, and, you know, up yours is not a greeting like it is in Manhattan. So we
are... Depends on who you're talking to, Jeffrey.
That's true, but in Charlotte, one thing you've noticed since you've moved here is I talk to everybody, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I talk to everybody, and how many people of those that I talk to am I able to engage?
All of them.
All of them. Why you're am fascinated. I able to engage them? Because I'm friendly, because I'm gregarious, and because I may have something funny to say. Or I'll like,
fascinating.
Right, I'm fascinating, right? But I can steer my cart into their cart and go, last night, I was with Gabrielle. We walked into Target. I had my Eagles hat on, and some kid comes running up to me and goes, E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles. And it's...
That's amazing.
Right, but that's how friendly and open Charlotte is, and it helps when you are... fascinating enough or that you are engaging enough to be able to make the other person converse back and smile.
Yeah, I mean, in New York, you don't talk to strangers.
You don't even
look
at them.
Right. You avoid eye contact at all costs. When I got to St. Louis for school, someone said hi to me on the street, and my first instinct was to grab my pocketbook
right, exactly.
and protect it because I thought that they were trying to rob me. But really, they were just being friendly.
So the challenge for you out there in podcast land is to be more engaging. And this is an easy time of year to do it. People are open. People are willing to buy. People are friendly. So don't avoid anybody right now. Look them in the eye. Even if you're in New York City in an elevator, you can say happy holiday or as we're now allowed to say Merry Christmas.
I think about taking the Publix method. Like, you know, when you go into the supermarket Publix, they all say hi to you.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's someone cleaning the floor or someone stocking the shelves or a cashier.
Right. They catch your eye and they say hello to you.
The manager,
yep.
They look, that's exactly right. They know to look you in the eye.
Briefly, one story. I did a seminar at the Marriott Wild something or other in Palm Springs. It's actually Palm Desert, the Marriott Palm Desert. And every single person who works at that hotel says hello to every single person that walks by. It's like clockwork, and it seems genuine. I mean, they're friendly about it. So I went up to the meeting.
It sounds like the Ritz.
So, no, it's not. It's Marriott. And so I go up to the meeting planner, and I said, have you noticed that everybody says hello to you here? And she goes, oh, yeah, it's our fourth year here. Now, there's a reason for that, because Palm Springs and Palm Desert are impossible to get to. I mean, if you look it up on an airline, it says you can't get there from here. You have to fly someplace that you fly like to Los Angeles and then drive for 2 hours or you take a puddle jumper over the mountain. It's scary as hell.
Someone carries you on their back.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody, right. You get there by rickshaw. But, I think that it's incredible that they would go to that end just to engage. So who are you engaging? How friendly are you at the engagement process? And once you engage them, how fascinating are you to be able to continue that conversation or that dialogue? So
we've got a great guest to talk about.
We do?
Oh,
how
yeah,
exactly
we do.
To do that.
And she is misengaging herself, and
yep.
she is also fascinating.
She is one fascinating babe, and she is going to talk to you today about how other people view you by telling you and challenging you. You can go write down sell or die, because you're going to need it for the end of the show, when you go to her website, and you can take the engagement test, the fascinating test, for free simply by entering that promo code.
Yeah, she's all about how to be fascinating. Have you guys ever heard of the term peacocking?
Tell us about it, Doug.
Yeah, Doug.
I know, Jeffrey, I know you've heard of this term.
Yeah, so, it's the North Carolina peacock. Everyone knows who it is.
No, so peacocking, they talk a lot about this in terms of dating or going, you know, you go to bars and you want to get people's attention very quickly. And so you show your colorful feathers, whether it be, you know, maybe wearing something that catches people's eyes. I know I had a friend of mine who used to wear... He showed up at the bar one night and he had rings on almost every single finger. And I said, what the hell are you doing? He's like, I'm peacocking. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, when people see all these rings on my fingers, they're going to ask, why do you have rings on all of your fingers? And that starts the conversation. I'm like, yeah, but you look like an asshole.
Exactly. So
there's being fascinating, but there's also being able to engage someone.
Yeah. You can't be uber fascinating. You can't walk into the bar in a 70s outfit and hope you're going to talk to somebody, 40 years ago. It has to be current. It has to be suave. And it can't be overbearing. Take your cologne and put it in the closet. If you stink, take a shower. but you have to have an engagement question. Now, I have an opening engagement question that I've asked for years. And I'll tell you the question, and then I'll tell you why I ask it. The question is, where did you grow up? Not where are you from, but where did you grow up? The reason I ask it is because it takes you back to the home or the house or the apartment that you grew up in and the place that you grew up in, country, city, wherever. It's emotional. You think about your siblings, you think about your parents, maybe they've passed on, whatever the circumstances are, it's an immediate opening question of emotion. Now, there's a second reason for that. If someone is from a small town, I know they're going to be a more trusting person. And if somebody is going to be from a big city. So if I ask somebody if they grew up in the Bronx, I know they have 14 door locks on their house. But if somebody grew up in a small town in Iowa, they never locked their house. So think about the question, where did you grow up, as an opening question to understand, are they going to trust you immediately or do you have a long way to hoe? And let's get some emotion involved in this whole conversation process.
Yeah, I love that. I started using that when you told me about it a couple of years ago. But what I've done in the past is I've done, if I can, if it's like a stranger I'm meeting out, you can't do any research. But in instances where I know who's going to be at the meeting I'm going to be at, I try to look them up online.
Can't you say, wait a second, can I just Google you? I mean,
that might be a little awkward.
Why?
But it's just weird. If you're standing with someone, you're not like, hold on, to me. I need to Google you first.
No, you don't have to say it. Just do it.
Sometimes I do.
How do you
That's
spell
creepy,
your last name?
But I do.
And just hit it. I said, man, you would be amazed at what pops up when I Google you. Look. Because most people, I would ask people, and I tell people in my seminars now, Google yourself. And do you know most people don't do it?
That's weird.
Most people haven't
done it. How do you not Google yourself? Don't you want to see what other people see about you?
I'm only telling you this.
It's the same thing as learning about being fascinating.
No, people are fascinated when they Google themselves. And they're fascinated with themselves about what their circumstances are.
But when you take the fascination assessment, I don't know if that's what it's called. If you take that, you see how the world sees you.
Right.
When you Google yourself, you also see how the world sees you.
And you see it in spades because the mother Google... She's hep to your jive,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to figure out, especially in this season, have you been naughty or nice? Are you asleep or awake? And they're going to read your letters.
Hep to your jive.
They're hep to your jive.
I think you've got the 70s leisure suit on right now.
I may have the 50s leisure suit on, but let's not, whatever. No, this is, I'm James Peirce.
All right.
All right. So let's get into it.
It's time to sell or die
with Sally Hogshead.
Oh my God, it's Sally Hogshead. Holy smoking moly, with her Hogshead logo and her famous sister.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Sal.
Hi, Sally.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
You have to listen to Sally give a talk. She is as arguably one of the best platform performers, male or female, on the planet. She's very inspirational in what she does. Unfortunately, I think she still uses Prezi, which is not one of my favorite things.
I just read yesterday Prezi is the PowerPoint of the future. Oh, so you better watch out, Jeffrey.
Yeah. It's like smoking dope in the 70s.
Don't hate on my slides. Uh-huh. Just because my slides are more gorgeous than yours, you don't diss on my slides.
I got you.
So Jen, I literally have been in a presentation watching Jeffrey. I flew in to listen to him. I flew into Charlotte to hear him do a presentation one time because it was before I actually knew him, so I wanted to suck up to him. So I watched him revise slides during the presentation.
Oh, yeah, he'll
in
do
other
that.
Words, so that's an example of the way that Jeffrey's constantly revising the content, even to the point of 40 minutes into the deal.
And people find it charming. If in the middle of the talk, he's like, well, I make my own slides. Hold on 1 second. Let me just fix this right here.
Something spelled wrong or something, I go in and fix it right away.
Or you're like, this could be better if I just change this one word.
Right.
All right, so Sally, we're here to talk about you. Tell us how, I know you wrote this amazing book, How the World Sees You, but before we get into your book and fascinating topics, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, so listen to this. I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida. My parents just celebrated their 62nd wedding anniversary.
Holy smokes.
We live in the same house. My parents live in the same house they did the whole time I was growing up. And twice a year, we celebrate what's called Hogger Fest. So the Hogshead family, because we're big, we split it into two halves. Half of us celebrate our birthdays in the spring Hogger Fest, and the other half celebrate in fall Hogger Fest. So imagine this, driving up to the house where I grew up, where my prom dress still hangs in my closet, and there's a banner that says, Happy Hogger Fest. And so if you can think, my parents were already branding the birthday experience when I was growing up. They had already built it. Like it's birthdays in our family are as much of a brand as Tesla and Apple and Mini Cooper. So I've always loved being able to have awesome experiences. And Jeffrey, you and I shared an awesome experience one time in Las Vegas. Do you want to tell a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm giving this was at a boot camp, and there was a bunch of speakers there, all of whom were pretty good. I mean, Darren Hardy was there.
That was like a cliffhanger, by the way. People are really wondering where this is going.
So Ed, Sally's boyfriend, comes up to me and goes, listen, I'm going to ask Sally to marry me today. I said, cool. He says, yeah, but nobody knows. So I'm going to put it on the back of a flip chart and I'm going to flip it over at an appropriate time. I said, okay, great. And so Sally's up on the stage and she's waxing and she goes, I'm on a dating thing and I want you to tell me which one of these three sentences would attract the right person. And she shows the audience and I think the audience picked the right one, and Sally, rather than saying it was number three, she goes around, jumps off the stage, and she goes, I picked my beloved, and she runs around to the back of the stage, whereupon, the back of the room, whereupon he flips over the chart, and it says, marry me, and she about died. The audience was crying and clapping. I mean, it was one of those things.
That is cool.
You didn't have to be there. Yeah. You wish you were there. It was
and you know what was phenomenal, Jeffrey, is that that you were the only one who knew, and I remember looking at your expression as soon as he flipped that over and asked me to marry him. That the shock and disbelief, I had absolutely no idea, and then I looked at you and I was like, Jeffrey knew, and it was so that was a real bonding moment, not just for me and my now husband, for us, and then. When I was inducted into the Speaker Hall of Fame, they said you can pick one speaker, any speaker who's also in the Hall of Fame, to introduce you. And I immediately chose you because it was the 1 year anniversary of when Ed had asked me to marry him at your event. So if it hadn't been your event, I don't know if I'd be married yet. So thank you.
Well, there you go. And at that introduction, Sally is a spokesperson for Jägermeister. And so I couldn't be at the event. So I did a film of introducing Sally in the Speakers Hall of Fame, and I had this bottle of Jägermeister next to me, and I'm faking like I'm drunk as I'm giving her the intro. Yes. It was pretty cool.
There's a point that you just made that I think would be great for us to describe. What does it mean to be fascinating, and what does that have to do with sales? What does that have to do with modern business, whether you're an entrepreneur or working in a corporation? And that point is, what makes Jägermeister fascinating? Can I jump in and share
Let's
that?
Let's hear it.
Yeah, go for
okay.
it.
About a year ago, when I was writing my first book in 2010, I was contacted by Jägermeister to become to help them make their brand more fascinating. what they came to me and said the problem was, they said people are aging out of the Jägermeister brand before they're of legal drinking age. So basically people,
that's people pretty were funny.
Like when they turned 21, they're like, oh, Jägermeister, that's so high school. And so, so let me ask you a question. What day of the week do you think most people typically would do a shot of Jägermeister?
Thursday.
Friday. Okay. So we'll go with Friday. What time of day would people typically do a shot of Jägermeister?
5
a.m.
5 p.m. No, 5 4 p.m. Oh, please.
5 like
p.m.
Style. For,
yeah.
Okay, so we went into bars and we started looking at how were people drinking Jägermeister. And what we saw was that there was this ritual that it always went pretty much the same way. And here's how it goes. Somebody goes up to the bar with a group and the person says, hey guys, I've got a great idea. Let's
do shots.
Do shots.
Let's do
Jägermeister.
Yeah, and everybody goes, ah, no. And then all of a sudden this like, crazy button in their head gets pressed and they say, yeah. So the bartender brings the tray of shots, puts it down. Everybody takes a shot, knowing it's going to taste like battery acid. They pound
right.
the shot. They grimace like it's kerosene. Then they slam it down and something critical happens in that moment.
They want another one?
They stand victorious. Yes. They start high-fiving and chest bumping.
Yeah.
And so what we saw consistently is the less people like the taste of Jägermeister, the more Jägermeister they drink. Now that sounds like that doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yes. The less people like the taste, the more they drink it. So the implications for sales are this. You can't compete on the basis of price or quality or taste if you don't have something hyper distinctive about you. You have to make sure that every product, including yourself, is positioned in a way that's so highly differentiated that you're creating an experience that's so memorable that when people interact with you and consume your product, they're going to still be talking about it years later.
That's so interesting. What's the chaser for Jägermeister? Like cough syrup or something?
Yeah, really. Remember the Coke Pepsi challenge would be like, yeah. Jägermeister or Robitussin.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done my Jägermeister. I'm now going to go on the Robitussin Express.
Yeah.
I used to do a Vanilla Coke Zero, and I called it a Darth Jaeger.
Oh.
I was an idiot.
Darth Jaeger. That's classic. But kids do drink Jägermeister, and I think they drink it because it's different. And they drink it because they want to be noticed. Like, I can drink this shit. It's horrible, but watch me.
And there's some mythology behind that. When Jägermeister was first imported into the United States, it was a German aperitif that was used as an anesthetic in World War II on the field. And in New Orleans, it was released in one bar. And the stuff tasted so vile that rumors started circulating that it had elk's blood and opiate in it. And so the importer was brilliant. It was Sidney Frank. And he released statements saying, drink it before it gets pulled off the market because this stuff is so toxic that it's going to be banned in the United States. So make sure you stock up on it. And that created the mythology behind it. So the lesson for that is anytime you can highlight some part of your history or accentuate something that creates the lore around your product that people can talk about and have a lot of associations, it helps your brand not be a commodity and instead be fascinating.
So fascination is something that you have been talking about for the better part of a decade. And I think that it's time to define it in terms of, what does this mean to me? Why do I want to be fascinating, Sally?
Fascination is a neurological state of intense focus. So when you fascinate your customer, your listener, your client, when you fascinate that person on the other side of the table, they're only listening to you. It's like their brain becomes sucked in on the conversation. Now, here's why this matters today. There are three factors that are super disruptive to sales and to business. First one is distraction. When people are distracted, they're not going to make a buying decision. They're either going to postpone it or they're going to say no. Second factor is competition. Competition is rising. Everyone's getting better. All products are starting to be seen as a commodity. And that leads us to our third. Most people see your product as being the same as somebody else's. And if they don't understand how it's different, then they're only going to pay the lowest price. And this is where wireless carriers and airlines have to get into that cycle of competing on the basis of price, where, you know, that sucks. There's no loyalty on price. So what I learned was, after doing a decade of studying 1 million professionals, is that just like brands need to differentiate themselves, high performers do two things differently. First thing high performers do differently is that they deliver a specific benefit. In other words, the creative people don't worry about the details, and the detail-oriented people were not trying to be great at creativity. So they were able to start to attract the kind of clients and projects and teams that allow them to constantly show up, be their most confident, over-deliver, and impress that person on the other side of the table. Second thing high performers do differently is they turn this benefit into a specialty. So instead of being a commodity, instead of being interchangeable with anybody else, the top people, what the high performers were doing, is that they honed in on creating a way to add value distinctly over and over again. They were being themselves on purpose, intentionally. They earned more money, they were more engaged, they created more loyalty, and they had a lot more power in their decision making.
So they can influence somebody simply by being better than the other person, product notwithstanding?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I'll give you an example. Jeffrey, when you took the Fascination Advantage assessment, this is what your report looks like.
Right.
When we looked inside of your report, what we saw is that you score unbelievably high in two things, creativity and power. What that means is you're going to be at your best in a situation in which somebody's looking for alternative solutions. Jeffrey, how do you like doing the same thing over and over again?
I hate it.
Yeah. What would it be like for you if you had a client that said, Jeffrey, we want a bullet pointed, formatted set of stats for everything you do for us?
I can't do that, but it's interesting. Someone will say, well, we have two breakout sessions and we want you to do the same speech twice. I refuse to do it. Because I forget what the hell I said the first time.
Yeah, you'll be modifying. Yeah. And so that's one of the things that makes you most valuable, not only as a speaker and a leader and a podcast host, but what it means is that in that area of being a change agent, that's your archetype, in this area, you have a huge competitive advantage. And that if you don't play to that competitive advantage, you're at a disadvantage and you're very unlikely to impress and influence your listener.
That's interesting. I can attribute my longevity to the fact that I customize every talk that I give to whatever mm-hmm. company it is. So if you're selling insurance or you're selling cars or you're selling copy machines, I will customize my talk just for you. And you'll walk away with ideas that you can take out into the street and turn into money. And literally, that's how I built my career, by being different than the other guy. What does Jen say? What is Jen's report? I want to know.
Jen's is the maestro. And here's what that means. The way Jen is most likely to impress and influence people is that she sees a goal very, very clearly. She sees it and she wants to go for it. She's like, imagine a Ferrari engine. She wants to find the target and then go hunt the deer, and then go as quickly as she can without distraction. Jen, do you find that you get frustrated when people don't seem to get with the program quickly?
Yes.
Or at all.
Do you find that it's frustrating for you when you're working with somebody on a team and it seems like they're willing to settle for something that's easier rather than better?
Oh, yeah.
I think more important, Sally, they can't keep up.
Yes. Yeah, well, like the Ferrari engine that Jen has become so hyper-focused. She literally sees that goal so clearly. A lot of people won't be able to match her pace, but that's why she has a competitive advantage. So Jen, you want to be able to look for clients, listeners, prospects that value goal orientation, that want somebody who's going to be ambitious and that can double down quickly to excel on a result.
That's cool. Sometimes when I have a goal in mind and someone's interrupting me, it's like, I can't focus on you right now. I have to do this one thing, you know, because I said I'm going to do it to myself right now or today or within the hour. I'm going for it. And yeah, like everything yeah. around me becomes invisible almost.
Sally, how many people have taken that test?
1 million. Wow. Over 1 million.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we have over 150,000 people in sales alone. And so what this means is we're constantly updating based on the data. So here's an example of what that research actually looks like in kind of a cool way. Let's take a look at Jen. When we look at Jen, when she did the report, this is her analytics. So we're looking at Jen compared to the average population. And what we see is Jen's score is really high in power. That means she's extremely confident and focused. She also scores high in prestige, which means she has really high standards, and don't disappoint her, otherwise you'll be dead to her.
It's called designer clothing.
I have really high standards. Got that, Jeffrey?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, Jen, can we turn it around? Can I interview you for a sec?
Sure.
Okay. In your archetype, we learned, in other words, your personal brand, when seen at its best, when you're at your highest level of performance, you are perceived with the following three adjectives. You are ambitious, confident, and focused. Now, here's why these adjectives matter. I was the number one most award-winning copywriter when I was 24 years old. And the reason why is because I learned if you can identify what makes a brand different, then you can rapidly accelerate the whole process of positioning that brand in a crowded marketplace. So I did the same for people. I developed an algorithm that measures how other people see you. It's not how you see the world. It's not like Myers-Briggs and DISC and Colby and StrengthsFinder. It's the opposite. We're turning it around and we're measuring how do people see you, just like a focus group measures how do people see Coca-Cola or Target. And then I take that data and I turn it into adjectives, because adjectives compare you to other people to demonstrate how you're different. So of these three adjectives, which one do you think best describes how you're different? Ambitious, focused, or confident?
Oof. I'm going to go with ambitious.
Okay. Now, if we take the word ambitious, what that means is you have a huge appetite for success and you're able to back it up with concrete deliverables and action. So it's critical for you to be putting yourself into situations, actively seeking out situations in which you can be as ambitious as possible. What does it feel like if somebody says, hey, Jen, whoa, 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 slow down. Let's hit the brakes for a minute. What's that like for you?
Well, she doesn't I want to use a curse word.
She doesn't own brakes.
Maybe
no,
inappropriate.
Sorry, this car had no brakes on it. We have to keep going.
I
want to
be like, screw you. Why do I have to slow down?
Yeah. And so Jen, on the other hand, what if you had a client who said, listen, I've got big goals and I need somebody to execute them and turbocharge? How would that be for
Boom.
You?
Boom. Let's do it.
Okay. Now, have you ever been in a situation in which somebody said to you, don't have such big goals, you're overreaching?
Well, that's pretty interesting.
Probably. I can't think of one offhand, but I would imagine so.
Well, you have bosses that don't think that you're as good as they are. Therefore, they'll try to keep you down on the farm.
Yeah. I mean, being in sales, I've always had, when I was a salesperson or sales manager, quotas that were really high. And so, you know, it's usually that the quota is the goal.
Right. And does that energize you to have a tangible goal?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are really freaked out by that. For a lot of people, that would be intimidating and it would shut them down because they don't want to have a tangible goal as an outcome. So the important thing for you is if you think about that word ambitious, imagine you're about to go into a crucial meeting. I want you to think of the word ambitious as a way for you to be positioning all of your communication. Jen, what would be an example of a situation when you want to play your A game with communication?
In other words, during a speech.
During
a speech.
So in your speech, think of, there's so many different touch points in a speech. There's the content, there's the delivery, there's how your slides look, there's your tone of voice, there's your body posture, how you interact with the client, how you interact with the audience, how you answer questions, et cetera. I want you to think of all of those different points through the lens of ambitious. How can you apply ambition to every single part of that? Because when you do, that's going to allow you to concentrate on the key areas that are not only going to make you most confident, but they're going to allow you to be most impressive and influential to get the best result. Jeffrey, how about you?
That's really cool. Hold on. Let's get to Jeffrey. But before we do, if I were listening to this, I'd want to know what I was.
Right.
Yeah. So everyone, all you need to do is go to howtofascinate.com/you.
How to fascinate. And if you don't know how to spell fascinate, go to Google.
Okay. Let's hope you do. Yeah. howtofascinate.com/you.
And then two S's in fascinate.
And then you can take this really cool assessment. It's quick. It's like 3 minutes to find out all about yourself using the code, access code, sell or die. All one word. Sell or die.
Yeah, and you better listen, when you find this stuff out, then you have a chance to do something with it. You don't read it and put it away.
Yeah, but
you read it and figure out, you go to Sally's video things and figure out how to turn it into money.
And re-listen to what Sally just said to me about ask yourself these same questions. So, you know, where do you want to use your power? I don't know what you called these words, but your power adjective.
Yeah. Right.
And how do you want to communicate that? And go through those questions that Sally just asked me in your frame. And that'll be really cool.
Totally cool.
All right, let's hear yours, Jeffrey.
Okay, Sal, your turn. What do I want to think about?
We're going to focus on the adjectives because remember, the adjectives describe how you're different.
Yep.
Jeffrey, you're sort of like the Jägermeister of people. very
he tastes
flavored.
Bad.
Yeah, I'd rather have Robitussin than Jeffrey. So if Jeffrey's a brand, we want to find the adjective that's going to best describe who Jeffrey is at his highest performance. Southwest, their adjective is friendly. Coca-Cola, their adjective is delightful. Nike, their adjective is empowering. And the key is for you to be able to build all your communication around this. Now, when we look at yours, Jeffrey, when we look at you here, mm-hmm. your primary is power. Your secondary is innovation. That means, like Jen, you communicate confidently. You're going to be seen at your best when you're able to be fluid, to be able to be articulate, and also to be extremely creative. Here are your three adjectives. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Inventive, untraditional, and self-propelled. Inventive, untraditional, and self-propelled. Of those three adjectives, which one describes how you are different?
I'm going to say inventive is going to be the first one for sure, and untraditional is going to be a very close second, and I'll let me explain mm-hmm. why.
Yes.
When I gave my main platform talk at the National Speakers Association, there are 4,000 members. There were about 1,600 in my audience. I was the first guy in the...
I was there. People are still talking about that.
I was the first guy in the history of the National Speakers Association to get off the platform and walk in the audience. First person ever.
That is untraditional.
And it was totally untraditional, but what it gave me was better insight to the audience. I could hang with them. The one thing that I pride myself on when I'm talking to an audience is not just creative stories or ideas that are transferable. It's my eye contact. Like I have driller eye contact because I'm confident enough to talk to somebody and look them right in the eye when I tell the story. And I found out that when you look at one, all are looking at you. When you look at all, almost none are looking at you. They're looking at their partner and nodding or doing something. But man, when I'm one-on-one, he's going, who's he looking at? What did he do? And it creates curiosity in the audience that allows me to tell the next thing. I found one other thing, which I think is very important to share with the audience. At the end of laughter is the height of listening. So I know how to, and Sally, you've heard me talk, and Jen, you've heard me talk.
Yeah, you have crescendos.
I'm funny. And, and at the end of funny, I make a point. Because I know that when you go to a comedy club and you're laughing so hard that your drink is coming out of your nose, the guy starts to talk again and you go, shh, shh, shh. because you want to hear the next whatever.
Yeah.
At the end of laughter is the height of listening, and that's where I deliver my most important points.
So being, you chose the adjective inventive, and so let's deconstruct what you just described. You're already naturally doing things that are invented. You're not plastering on an adjective that I gave to you. You're taking something that's authentically part of how you naturally succeed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are several examples of how you're inventive in your life that go far beyond your excellence in speaking. You live in a converted cracker factory, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, I've had the opportunity to visit you many times. And one of the things that I love is every time that I come, you've taken new parts of the factory and converted them to different parts of your business. And, you know, you're not following a roadmap to how people traditionally would set up their offices. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Wait till you see what Jennifer's done
to the place.
Well, yes, I'm a collector. But now with my partner, Jen, it's become a dual collection. We collect Paris, we collect art, we collect books, and so my library is expanded based on her likes, and my art collection is expanded based on her likes, and we've basically reconnoitered my entire living unit into a place that's absolutely cool, and our offices follow suit.
Yeah.
All of my sports memorabilia is sold, and we've converted the downstairs, if you can remember it, and it's now an art gallery. So you can sit and write and be inspired by Parisian art, or I have a collection of the Algonquin Roundtable authors, the Writers Roundtable.
Yes, I remember that.
And it's expanded significantly to where it now occupies a full bookcase. But you can sit and write in front of Dorothy Parker or George Kaufman, you know, people that won Pulitzer Prizes, and it's inspirational.
So it's funny because my dormant part was Mystique. And like Jeffrey, and Jeffrey is very open about, you know, our stuff and where we live and how we live and that kind of stuff. And I like to keep that a little bit more hidden.
No, New Yorkish. Don't look at people, make no eye contact, and talk to no one.
Well, I just don't know that our listeners need to know all about this stuff, but you know, they do.
No argument about that, but my philosophy is talk to everyone. The more salespeople talk, the more confident they become in any situation. Talk to people in elevators. Talk to the guy in the Starbucks line. Talk to people to where you become confident in anything you speak, and try to make them smile or laugh. That's the deal. So I'll be in Starbucks line at the cashier, and there's a guy at the end with a big cup of coffee with whipped cream and caramel crap all over it, and I go, that's kind of girly, isn't it? And
one of these days, I swear, he's going to get punched in the face.
But the bottom line is the guy is laughing, the barista is laughing, and I've created two smiles in 3 seconds.
So let's get back to you, Sally.
Oh, yeah, Sally. So,
okay, I've never taken an assessment that created or gave me an output of results that was so spot on. How did you come up with this? And I know you studied it for over a decade, but what even got you into this?
When I first started, I was in advertising. And what I loved about creating television campaigns for brands was that you have to immediately identify the essence of that brand and what's going to make them more admired, allow them to raise their prices, and make them stand out in the marketplace. And I did an experiment in which I gave women two pairs of sunglasses that were exactly the same. One pair had a Chanel logo. One pair did not. People were willing to pay 400% more for the pair with the Chanel logo, even though the glasses themselves were exactly the same. So the glasses were a commodity. The glasses were not differentiated. But what people were paying for, it was actually the logo, because it allowed them to create a certain persona. It allowed them to become more fascinating. So the lesson is this. When people want to work with you, they're not buying the commodity. They're not buying the sunglasses. They're buying what is the value that you add that's totally distinct, so that you can raise your prices and keep your stature in the industry of a premium level, so that you're not competing on price. When I left advertising, I started realizing there are all these great assessments that tell us how do I see the world? What are my strengths? Well, strengths are good to know, but what really matters, what are your differences? And so I began looking at, well, how do we measure this in brands? How do we measure what makes Mini Cooper different than BMW? These were two of my clients. And I just went through looking at exactly how we positioned these clients by identifying what their key, most valuable differentiating quality was. And I created an algorithm that does the exact same thing for people. So we're looking through the eyes of other people, kind of like this. Here's the cover of How the World Sees You. Yep. You can see there's a mirror on it in the you. And the reason why there's a mirror is because a lot of times when we look in the mirror, we see reflected back our flaws, our insecurities, and we tend to kind of dumb down the ways in which we're different. I want this system to be able to show people who they are at their best so they can go to that every single time to do it on purpose, to do it intentionally. And that's how people are most likely to add value.
When you look in the mirror, you see flaws. And when you look in the mirror, you tend to be more critical. Like I have a thing where I put my goals up in my bathroom mirror so I can look at what I'm supposed to be doing as opposed to who I am or what I look like at that moment, because I'm fat and I'm losing my hair. I know that's a surprise, but I don't care. What I care about is, what am I going to do today? What am I going to accomplish today? What's my life like going to be like today? And my football team won last night.
You're not fat.
I know. Well, I'm slightly heavy. But for me, I'm fat. I grew up being called skinny, and now I got, 20 extra pounds on me. I feel like I'm lugging around a tire. But anyway, it's important for you to feel great when you look in that mirror.
Right.
It's important for you to feel as though you're empowering yourself when you look in that mirror. And that's what I get by just sticking a few post-it notes up on my bathroom mirror.
There's a Dan Kennedy, Jeffrey, a mutual friend of ours, had a great quote one time. He said, at the highest level of income, people aren't paid for what they do. They paid for who they are. What you do is a commodity. It's parity. You can't charge more for what you do. Who you are, it allows you to be different. And I think that kind of speaks to what you're describing, that it's not the act of the job. It's not just the skill of the salesperson. It's who they are. Are they inspiring trust in the other person so that they can keep their ability to stand out?
Let me throw one thing to that also. I tell my family of people, I'm not paying you to do your job. I'm paying you to think. If you can think beyond the cash register, if you can think beyond the sales presentation, if you can think beyond the delivery, you're going to win. And if you can't think, you're going to be admonished for being stupid.
Yeah.
If you work in a warehouse, when I was a manufacturer for a long time, my criteria for hiring somebody to work in the warehouse is you had to be smarter than the boxes. And if you're not smarter than the boxes, what the hell are you doing here? So yeah. I'm paying you to think about what you do, not simply to perform your function.
Yeah. You one time had a great suggestion in one of your speeches, Jeffrey. You said the best way to open a conversation is to ask the other person a question that requires them to think about the answer.
Correct.
So it's not, where are you from? It's asking them a question like the caramel mocha latte, the example you gave them.
Right.
It's a little girly, isn't it?
I actually redefined that question. I got it down to be emotional, and I say, where did you grow up?
Mm.
Because where did you grow up? It got you talking about
your hogs day.
It got you talking about, and I promise you, your bedroom, your prom dress, your banners, the family, your mom and dad being married for 62 years, that all was a flood of emotion, and we began emotionally.
Mm.
It's so important to begin emotionally, because if you begin logically, then all that's left is your price.
Yeah. Mm.
And you're indeed perceived as a commodity.
The
whole fascination thing that you do, Sally, is all about emotion.
Yeah, it's about how do you create an emotional connection so that you don't have as much pressure on selling the most or selling at the lowest price, but instead, how can you offer something that absolutely nobody else can do? And the problem is we already know, it's not a surprise that you need to stand out in a crowded market, but the problem is, how do I stand out?
Right.
What makes me different? And that's the piece of the puzzle that had been missing that I, the purpose of the assessment is to solve that. I'll tell you exactly what makes you different and show you how to build the communication around that. So it becomes really easy to introduce yourself or deliver a speech like Jen described in a way that not only is authentic and natural, but allows you to feel energized and totally in control.
Well, I'm fascinated. How about you, Jen?
Oh, yeah.
You're the you're the Jägermeister of people. I love
exactly.
That.
Seriously.
Exactly. I come in a green bottle, but I don't smell that good.
No, just for the record, I do not like Jägermeister.
Well, just for the record, I have drunk it one time, and I don't understand how people can drink oil.
Oof.
I know, but listen, people do it because it's the cool thing to do. But whatever, it certainly has developed into something to talk about, something that's fascinating. And you got a lesson today, listeners, you diehards out there, about how you can become a little bit more fascinating. You should go to howtofascinate.com, enter the promo code sell or die, and you will receive a free fascination test so that you can find out your primary and secondary strengths or looks or qualifications, and it will surprise the heck out of you because of its accuracy. It will be 100% stone cold accurate. Sally and her team of leprechauns have put
Keebler elves.
Elves. I forgot, it's the wrong season.
It's pretty amazing how accurate it is.
Unbelievable. And I don't mean to demean the people that work behind the scenes here. She's got brilliant people on her team, and she's brilliant, who have put together this process. And she, when you hear her articulate it, it's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. So my recommendation is go take the fascination test, find out how fascinating you are versus how fascinating you think you are, and maybe when you see what your strengths are, play to them. Play to those strengths and try to engage people a little bit more deeply and let them recognize that strength in you.
So I don't know if people are following us on Facebook, but we've been doing a lot more Facebook Lives lately, and we're asking for your questions for the show. So what we're trying to do is get on Facebook Live a few minutes before we record the episode.
Yeah.
And this way we can answer your questions live on the show.
And if you have a question, you can do it sellordie@gittimer.com.
Or just follow Jeffrey and I on Facebook.
Yeah, or Twitter.
And well, for Facebook Live. Uh-huh. So if they follow us on Facebook, they can see when we're going live.
Yeah, I'm / Jeffrey Gittimer.
Turn notifications on.
I'm / Jeffrey Gittimer because I have a
personal
page.
Just search for one of our names.
Yeah, well, there's two of names. There's two of mine. There's two of yours. You want to go to the business one.
Anyway,
you can also go to Overcast and download the app on your iPhone and subscribe and like us a few times so we can maintain our ranking. And we'll kind of take it from there. This is Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow.
Yeah, what? Jen Gluckow, the fabulous babe from New Jersey who claims to be from New York.
That's right.
And
founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
Now we're talking. And I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even in this holiday season, even if your ass falls off.